Okay, good evening, everybody. I thought this was a good opportunity, now that we finished a malacha that was difficult, to get through all of the underpinnings and understandings and all the qualifications of the malacha of Zoreya. I thought maybe we'll take it a little bit easier and talk about something which is extremely practical, and that is the area of muktzah. Muktzah is something which, to many of us, might seem like something which is very complicated, but in fact we're going to make it as simple as we possibly can, because it's very easy to violate the laws of muktzah, and that's why perhaps it's a good opportunity for us to go through it. So by way of introduction, this evening we're going to talk about the background of the halacha of muktzah. And we'll begin. The Gemara Maseches Shabbos tells us, in Daf Kuf Chav Gimel Amud Beis, the Gemara says that muktzah seems to be a takana midrabanan. Muktzah is something which is not biblical, it's only rabbinic. And the Gemara tells us it was instituted in the times of Nehemiah, of Ezra Nehemiah. And the reason why he instituted it is because he saw that people were being metaltal kalim all over the place. People were carrying things and touching things, and they were so busy being mezalzel and kavod Shabbos, and therefore he decided, we have to make some sort of gether, we have to make some sort of harchaka. And what he did was he made an institution of muktzah. Now, what exactly falls under the category of muktzah, we'll see that in the coming weeks. But that's basically what the Gemara tells us. Now, the Netziv asks a very fascinating question, and it's an important question that's not only discussed by the Netziv, but it's discussed by many other Acharonim as well, and that is, how can the Gemara tell us in Shabbos Kuf Chav Gimel that Nehemiah is the one who instituted the violation of muktzah? Don't we all know there's a very gripping Gemara in Maseches Shabbos Daf Lamed Amud Beis where we're told David HaMelech died on Shabbos? And the Gemara there goes through a description of David HaMelech was supposed to lose his life on a given day. However, he was learning all the time, and the Yetzirah doesn't have, the Malach HaMavis does not have a right, does not have an opportunity to take somebody's life while they're learning. So David HaMelech's life was prolonged, and he couldn't figure out how to get David HaMelech, and finally he makes a tree rustle, and David HaMelech turns his attention, and that's the way he, since his attention was off of learning for a second, that's when the Malach HaMavis was able to get him, and that's the way David HaMelech died. And the Gemara tells us that the death of David HaMelech was on Shabbos. Now, in fact, if you look in the Tamei HaMenhagim, he writes something very interesting. He writes that on Matzah Shabbos, anyone ever wonder why we say, for those who say there's mirrors on Matzah Shabbos, I never grew up saying that, but many people do. So we say it's the Suda of David Malka Mashicha. What about Matzah Shabbos? Is the Suda of David HaMelech? What does David HaMelech have anything to do with Matzah Shabbos? What did he do on Matzah Shabbos? Anybody ever wonder that? I've wondered it for a long time. You know, this past Shabbos, I was with Rabbi Asher Weiss in Boca Raton, Florida. So Matzah Shabbos, they had him alava Malka with him, and he's going on a whole beautiful interpretation to explain. You know, by the Sudas David Malka Meshicha, we talk about only two figures. We talk about Yaakov Avinu and Eliyahu Hanavi, and nowhere else do we have Zmiris that talk about just individual personalities, Altira Avdi Yaakov and Eliyahu Hanavi, which is another Pismon. And he went on to a lengthy description to explain why it is that we have Zmiris on Matzah Shabbos about, number one, Yaakov Avinu, and number two, David, and number two, Eliyahu HaNavi, because this is the Sudas David Malka Meshicha. And it made me wonder, why is it the Sudas David Malka Meshicha? Why is that so obvious to us? That, to me, didn't make any sense in the first place. Only once you understand the premise can you then go on to explain why we have Yaakov Avinu, Eliyahu HaNavi. So the Tamei HaMenhagim writes that the reason why it's called the Sudas David Malka Meshicha is because David HaMelech knew it was destined that he was going to die on Shabbos, and he knew that. And because he knew that every Matzah Shabbos that he made it through, so to speak, and he knew that obviously this wasn't the week and he was going to live another week and it wasn't going to be till next Shabbos, he sat down on Matzah Shabbos and he used to sing, he used to be Meshabeach, he used to thank the Ribono Shel Olam for giving him another week of life, for this Shabbos not being the one where his life was taken away. And he would make a Suda Gedola on Matzah Shabbos, and that's what we call it, the Suda is David Malka Meshicha. How interesting is that? I never knew that was the reason. Now I understand the reason, but that's based on the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos Daf Lamed that tells us that David HaMelech died on Shabbos. Now the Mefarshim ask, how could it be that David HaMelech died on Shabbos if the Yerushalmi writes, you look at number Aleph, Tosis quotes in Chagiga, Daf Yud Zayin, in the name of the Yerushalmi, that Amar Rav Yossi Barbun, David Meis Ba'atzarta. Atzarta means Atzeres. Atzeres is Shavuos. Anybody, I am not a calendar guy at all. I never know how to figure out calendars, but for those who know calendars, is Shavuos ever able to fall on Shabbos? No. No, why not? Because there's a rule, lo badu Pesach. Since Pesach cannot fall out on badu, beis, dalet, or vav, so then that would follow that 7 weeks later, Shavuos is also not able to fall out on Shabbos. So how could it be that David meis ba'atzeres, and at the same time David meis on Shabbos, how could it be that Shabbos fell out on Shavuos? It doesn't make any sense. So this is a very interesting question. It's really not important, but the Shari Tshuva writes as well that the reason why we lay in Rus on Shavuos is because David HaMelech, in fact, died on Shavuos. So how can that be? If you do the math, and he put the Gemaras together, where the Gemara tells us that David meis on Shabbos and David meis on Shavuos, that's the Yerushalmi. So how does all this make sense? How can you say that David HaMelech? So you'll say they were Mekadesh al Pi Riyah. The Gemara says 5, 6, 7. So we know they were Mekadesh in those days al Pi Riyah. It wasn't a fixed calendar like we have today. So you'll say that since they were Mekadesh al Pi Riyah, anything can happen. You can have Shavuos fall out on any given day. That's what I would have said, and it sounded good to me until... No, I think it's probably the right answer. However, I saw today, not so simple. And that is not so simple because Rav Sadia Gaon writes that the Klal of Lo Adu Rosh, which is figuring out some of the Yom Tovim, you'll talk to a calendar expert on that, that was applicable even when they were Mekadesh Al Pi Riyah. Now, how is that possible? I don't really understand. How can that be? How can that be? If you're Mekadesh Al Pi Riyah, you see the moon, then you're Mekadesh that night is Rosh Chodesh or the day before is Rosh Chodesh. How can you fix the calendar and say, still Lo Adu Rosh? I'm not sure exactly how it works out, but that's what some Rishonim assume, that even when they were Mekadesh Al Pi Riyah, some of these rules still were applicable. So I don't know.
Pesach yeah. Is the first day of Shavuos.
Right.
Right. So the rule is lo bad yisho. Right.
Yeah.
Pesach can't fall on a Friday.
Right.
Ergo, if you have a fixed calendar, Shavuos can never fall on a Shabbos. But Pesach, you can still apply the lo.
It's always 49 days later.
And then, depending on when Rosh Chodesh falls, there was no rule on Shavuos. It says Shavuos can't fall certain days.
It doesn't matter because Shavuos is 49 days after Pesach. So if Lo Badu Pesach, it's not possible that Shavuos can fall out 49 days later on a Shabbos. It just can't be. It's not that Rosh Chodesh will make a difference.
Maybe they would accept witnesses if it violated Adur
Rosh. I guess that's what it means. It's surprising to me. I would have said intuitively, like you, when they're Mekadesh Al Pi Riyah, so you're Mekadesh Al Pi Riyah. It is what it is. Doesn't matter what day it falls out. Anyway, interesting, not really very important to our topic, but I just thought it was a fascinating, for those who are into calendaric dates, it's a fascinating topic. Anyway, what we find is that Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos Daf Lamed that David HaMelech dies on a Shabbos, and the problem is Shlomo HaMelech is not sure how do we deal with the body of David HaMelech. What are we supposed to do? We can't bury him on Shabbos. That's a malacha. We know we're not allowed to dig into the ground, so what are we supposed to do? So the Gemara says that that's where they came up with this idea of Kikar Otinok. Now, this is a very famous concept, which is when you have a dead body, which is Buktza on Shabbos. So when you have a dead body, you're allowed to put a kikar otinok, a child, obviously a child is mutter to carry, or a kikar, a loaf of bread, which is also permissible to carry on Shabbos, you're allowed to put that on top of the dead body, and then the dead body becomes, so to speak, a basis ledavar amutter. Then the dead body becomes, so to speak, a tray, or a way of carrying that which is permissible, and therefore, that was the way they were able to be metalto the body of David HaMelech. Now, this is an important halacha. The Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch writes in Arachayim Simen Shin Yud Aleph, look at number Beis. Mace hamuto b'makom sheyarei alav. Let's say you have a mace that's in a place where a person, lo aleinu rachmana litzlan, a person drops dead in the middle of the field and it's boiling hot outside and the body's going to decay over the rest of Shabbos if nobody takes care of it. So what do you do? Says the Shulchan Aruch, yesh kikar otinok metaltalo al yadehim. If you have a kikar otinok, then you put those on top of the body and then you're able to transport the body because of that. Now, in Siv Dalid, the Shulchan Aruch writes over there, v'yesh misha omer shelo hutzruchu kikar otinok. You only need a kikar otinok when what? Ela lemeis arum. Only when the person drops dead, when they're wearing no clothing. However, achim hu b'ksuso enotzach. If the person is wearing clothing when they die, so then the clothing is the same as a kikar otinok. Why? Because the same way I'm allowed to carry my suit on Shabbos, not obviously with an eruv, obviously that's what we're talking about, but the same way I'm allowed to carry my suit, so the suit is just like carrying a child, carrying a kikar. So therefore, we would assume if the mace has clothing on, that would be a good enough way of bypassing the system. That would be a good enough reason to carry the mace themselves. So all the Rishonim ask a question. I'm sorry, the Achronim, the Taz and the Magen Avram. What do you think, David HaMelech? The whole discussion, the Gemara is, what was Shlomo HaMelech going to do with his father? How is he allowed to carry the body? Ayat Shabbos, Ayat Mukta, what are we going to do? What do you mean, David HaMelech wasn't wearing any clothing? When he dropped dead, he was in the middle of the field. So David HaMelech was walking around without any clothing on? Does that make any sense? So if you're correct, says the Taz and the Magen Avram, if you're correct, that it's a good enough reason to carry a mace, who really should have been muktzah, but it's a good enough reason to carry them because they're wearing clothing, so why wasn't David HaMelech the same? Shouldn't David HaMelech been the same? Of course he was wearing clothing when he died. So this is an interesting question. Look at number Gimel. Shamati Makshim, says the Magen Avram. I heard a question that those asked, Lama Hatzricho de'abi David HaMelech shemeis, de'shabes letalto de'kikar otinok. Why does the Gemara have to come up with this reason of kikar otinok? That's the only way they were able to carry David HaMelech. Ay, hello, David, lo haya arum bo'os hashah. We know that David HaMelech obviously was not walking around naked on Shabbos. It doesn't make any sense. It can't be. He wasn't taking a shower at the time. Hare meis be'oska b'tor. We know David HaMelech was in the middle of learning. K'de'isa shami gemar. He wasn't taking a shower. Shabbos afternoon, it says the Malach HaMavis couldn't get him because he was learning. So ask the Magen Avraham, why does the Gemara have to come up with this idea of kikar otinok? What about the clothing? Obviously the Shulchan Aruch is wrong. So then he writes as follows, V'chacham echad tirit. Says the Magen Avraham, listen to a brilliant shot. The shiny big day Melech, yes, you're right. A regular person who passes away and wearing clothing on Shabbos, you're allowed to carry the dead body because the body has clothing on it and the clothing is a davar amuter, so that's okay. That's going to allow us to be metal to the muktzah. However, he says, by a Melech is different. Why da asurim the shar b'nei adam? We know that the big day HaMelech cannot be worn by anybody else. The Melech is the only one that's allowed to use those begadim, and they cannot be reused afterward. And therefore he says, K'detznan, like we learn, the Gemara in the first parak in Avodah Zarah, Sarfin ala Melechim, you have to burn the clothing that the Melech used to wear. U'kamosha kasav haramba mehilchas Melechim, the Sarfin kol begdam kodam levayasam. You have to burn all the clothing because no one else is allowed to have use. So it would be a bizayon hamelech if somebody else uses them. Imkain lohayu big day David ruuyim shagam heim neser betiltil. A brilliant shot. Yes, you're right. A regular person who passes away and is wearing clothing, the clothing is a good enough heter to carry the dead body which should have been muktza. However, the clothing of a melech is going to be categorically different. And why is that? Because the clothing of a melech cannot be used for anything else. So the clothing of a melech, therefore, will not allow us to carry the body of the melech which is muktza. Okay, interesting, Magen Avraham. Now the problem.
Did each king have a designated?
Oh, Frektitaz, what do you mean? That's not true. That's not a good answer. Why? Because we know that it's only usher for a hedyo to use it. It's only usher for a regular layman to use it. But for another melech, like over here, Shlomo HaMelech was taking over for his father, he would be allowed to use it. That's clear in the Gemara in the second parak in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says, Lemelech acher, it's permissible. So how can you give this answer that the reason why they weren't able to carry David HaMelech's body is because David HaMelech died and his clothing are not usable again? What do you mean? Why can't he use them for the son Shlomo HaMelech, who is now taking over for his father? So that's the problem with this very sharp answer that the Magen Avraham gives. There are some who answer differently, and that is that in Yerideya it says, and unfortunately we're so used to hearing this shaila nowadays, when you have somebody who dies, let's say, Rachmana Litzlan, in a terrorist attack. So we had, let's say, this morning. So if somebody is shot, or somebody is wounded, or whatever it might be, and they die of the gunshot wound, or they die on the spot from whatever it was that happened to them. So the halacha is meis tofes mekomo. Not only do they have to be buried, but we bury them as is. We don't even do a tahara. The halacha is you don't even do a tahara. You leave the person as is with their clothing on. You don't change the clothing. You don't put on tachrichim. You leave the bloody clothing on them. And the reason why is because we assume, number one, the person has a very extra special level of kedusha because they died al kiddush Hashem. And therefore we assume that somebody like that is going to be, doesn't need the tahara process, doesn't need anything, which is a fascinating insight when you think about it. Can have the greatest Talmud Chacham, greatest Rosh Hashiva who's learning Torah their whole life and doing mitzvahs, and at the end of times, after 120 years, they're going to need a tahara in order to cleanse themselves before approaching the Rabbanu Shel Olam. You have somebody who dies al Kiddush Hashem when it's Mechal Shabbos their whole life, and all of a sudden they die al Kiddush Hashem. It gives you a little perspective of what kind of misa they have and what kind of kavod we're supposed to be displaying to them. It's a very important concept to think about, certainly in our times when, unfortunately, it's so very relevant, much more so than we would like it to be. If you hear from Marv, Marv's in the main shul at 9:30. So that's a very important halacha. So in Yerideya, we're told that the person would be buried with their clothing on. You don't take them off. And the reason why is because we want that it should be ma'orer, extra rachamim. When they get up to Shamayim and God is going to, so to speak, see the clothing that has blood all over it because of something that happened, so we assume that's going to be ma'orer, more rachamim Shamayim. He's going to stick out over and above everybody else who's, so to speak, up there in Bez and Shalmaila. So that's why we assume that the person is buried like that. And we're told, one of the Achronim gives an answer, that we're told in that Gemara that David HaMelech fell off of the roof or something like that. He looked off the other way and then he dropped and he fell out the building, whatever it was, and that's the way he fell to his death. So some Achronim want to say, maybe David HaMelech didn't have a tahara because he bled to death. And because he bled to death, so we buried him in his clothing. So maybe that's why the clothing weren't a good enough reason to go ahead and be matur the tiltul of David HaMelech. Okay.
Is it possible also that, because you anoint the king on Shabbos, so meaning his clothes would not be mutter anyhow until after Shabbos?
Interesting. Could be. It's an interesting suggestion. I like that. I mean, other Achronim raise a different issue, and that is, don't we know that a melech has to carry a sefer Torah kol yemei chayav? A melech always has to walk around with a sefer Torah, so isn't that a good enough reason to pick up the melech's body if he has a sefer Torah on him? So, okay, all these kinds of interesting questions. Bottom line, what you see from the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, Daf Lamed Amud Beis, is from the fact that the Gemara is getting into the whole discussion, what you see is that there was a Takana Muksa already in the times of David HaMelech, and Shlomo HaMelech didn't know what to do with his father's body. His father died in Shabbos. So how can you tell me the Gemara Shabbos Kufchav Gimel that Nehemiah is the one who came around and was Masak and Exer of Muksa? It's not true. It was already around an institution in the times of David HaMelech. David HaMelech was way before Nehemiah. So how do you explain this apparent stira between the two Gemaras? This is a major problem. So some explain that Netziv writes, maybe you have to say that really you're right, it was an institution in the times of David HaMelech. Really it's a Din D'Rabbanan. David HaMelech is the one who came up with it. And he realized that if we're not going to have the din of Muktza, people are going to be Mezalzel and Kavod Shabbos. However, Nehemiah realized in his days that people weren't being careful about it. And really, it wasn't accepted well in the times of David HaMelech. People didn't take it upon themselves. If any given generation is Gozer Gzeira Ala Tzibur She'einam Yecholim Lamud Ba, if they do something which is unbearable to us, so then we assume that it doesn't take effect. That it doesn't take effect. They can institute all they want. But if the community doesn't go along with the institution that the Chachamim came up with in our generation, so then it doesn't work. So that's why we said, in the times of David HaMelech, he instituted Muktzah. It says that Netziv, the generation wasn't holding there, they weren't able to accept it. And therefore, Nehemiah later on realized his generation was now ready to take it upon themselves. So he made the Takana Muktzah once again, but it wasn't his institution. It was really just reinstituting the ideas of David HaMelech. That's the way the Netziv explains. It's a very interesting concept that you can have Chazal can come up with a Takana, and unless we decide to accept it, it doesn't take root. It's a very interesting idea. Very interesting idea. We actually do have power against the rabbis. That's what you see. Right? We could gang up against them if we decide that something that they instituted is not of interest, or it's something we're not up to. What?
Reconciling that with losos.
Yeah. It is a little difficult. A lot difficult, yes. So so that's for another shir. Anyway, so that's an important netziv, not only for our case, but for other things as well. Now, the assumption of both the Gemara and Shabbos Kufchav Gimel and the Gemara and Shabbos Daf Lamed is that Muktzah is only a institution midrabbanan. Either Nehemiah is the one who instituted, David HaMelech instituted, but it's clear that it's only a Isser midrabbanan. The problem is, you look at number Dalid, which is the Gemara Msachem Daf Mem Zayin Amud Beis. Now here the Gemara tells us about a super balavera. The Gemara says you have somebody who can do one act, and in that act, he can violate so many averis in one time. You have to be a real genius, a real bar halacha, to figure out how you're going to violate so many things at one time. So the Gemara says, "Hamavashal gid hanasha bechalav biyamtiv." You have somebody who cooks gid hanasha, so figure it out. Gid hanasha bechalav on yamtiv. So how many averis are you going to violate? Says the Gemara, "Lo kechamish." So let's think about it. How do you have five violations all at one time? So number one, gid hanasha.
Eating.
Okay. So that's the next act. But how in the act of Bishul, how can you violate five things at one time? So you're Mavashal Basar B'chalav, Gid HaNash is Basar. So you have Basar B'chalav, that's number one. You're doing lighting a fire on Yom Tov for no reason. That's Malacha number two. You're only allowed to light a fire on Yom Tov if it's for the purpose of eating. But over here, it's not for the purpose of eating. Yeah, what else are you going to come up with? What else do you have? Basar B'chalav, cooking on Yom Tov. What else? So the Gemara's what? So you have a couple of problems. So let's say you'll add in a third. How do you come up with five? So the Gemara has this problem. How do we come up with this case? How do you have somebody who does one act on Yom Tov of cooking, Gid HaNash B'chalav? How can you come up with five violations of Malkus? How is it possible? So the Gemara says, well, you have to say that the person uses Atzei Muktza. You use Eitzim of Muktza. You use wood for the fire that is Muktza. What does that mean? Ask the Gemara a question. What do you mean you use Muktza, Frakti Gemara, Muktza, the Raisihi? What do you mean? We're talking about a case where a person violates something and he's going to have to now pay with five sets of Malkus. Now, in order to be Chayiv Malkus, you have to violate an Issa de Raisi. You can't violate an Issa de Rabbanan. You're not Chayiv Malkus for an Issa de Rabbanan. So you're only going to be Chayiv Malkus if you violate an Issa de Raisa. So again, cooking Basar B'chalav, Issa de Raisa. Cooking an Yom Tov Shelo Letzarech, Issa de Raisa. I got it. Cooking with Atzei Muktzas and Issa de Raisa, it's only the Rabbanan. Ask the Gemara. Answers the Gemara, nah, Amar La'in, it's true. In, major mistake. Whenever you learn in Gemara, Ein in Hebrew means no. In means yes in Aramaic, so that's a complicated thing to remember. Says the Gemara, Amar La'in, yes, it's true. Dechziv, V'haya B'yom HaShishi V'hechinu as Asher Yaviyu. Last week's Parsha and Bishalach, we learn that V'haya B'yom HaShishi V'hechinu as Asher Yaviyu. Yes, in Boca Raton, they did read Parshas Yisro this Shabbos, so it's really 2 weeks ago's Parsha, I got it. Dechziv, V'haya B'yom HaShishi V'hechinu as Asher Yaviyu. Says the Gemara, you're right. We learn the halacha of muktzah from a pasuk. Everything has to be set aside from before, And if you don't set aside from before, it's buktzan, you're not allowed to be metaltalit. So don't you see from here that it would seem to be a Isur Daraisa to violate the din of Muktzan Shabbos? This is a major problem because it stands in stark contrast to the Gemara both in Shabbos Daf Lamed that seems to say David HaMelech instituted Muktza, and the Gemara in Shabbos Kuvchav Gimel that says that Nechemiah is the one who instituted Muktza. Here we have a Mefurisha Gemara Msachem that says that Muktza is in Isur Daraisa, and we have the very same Gemara in Beitza Daf Beis, where Rashi tells us also quoting this Gemara that it is a Isur Daraisa to violate the din of Muktzan Shabbos. So how do you reconcile this apparent contradiction? So there are two basic approaches. Approach number one is, says the Pnei Yehoshua. Pnei Yehoshua tells us that you're right. This Gemara in Beitza is talking about super duper mukta. Now, what does that mean? What's super duper mukta? What's more mukta than anything else? Says the Pnei Yehoshua, something that is no lot on Shabbos. What does that mean? Something which is born on Shabbos, that is certainly mukta. So again, says the Pnei Yeshua, regular muktzah, touching a car, doing this, picking up your cell phone, all those kinds of things, that's muktzah mederabbanan. That came later on. Muktzah da'araisa, that everybody would agree is an issa da'araisa, says the Pnei Yeshua. You know what that is? That's talking about something that, let's say, the tree was intact before Shabbos started, and now on Shabbos all the branches fell off. So that's called nolad. That came out of nowhere. I never would have thought that on Shabbos these branches are going to be available to me. And now that they fell off, that's called nolad. So he says something which comes out of nowhere, which is totally nolad, something so unexpected, something that came really as a surprise to me, that we would consider to be muktza de'oraisa. That's the way that Pnei Yeshua explains, and that's the way he understands the Gemara in Psachim is describing a case like that. A person cooks Giran Asha B'chalav on Yamtiv, and he's going to get Malkus for the Isur de'oraisa of using Atzei muktza. What are we talking about? We're talking about branches that fell off a tree on Yom Tov itself, and therefore it's considered totally nolad, totally unexpected, and never would have thought of such a thing, and therefore in a case like that, you're going to violate the Isser of Muktzah Midaraisa on Shabbos. Yeah?
That would explain the David HaMelech, right? Because isn't the mace Muktzah because it's a nolad? The mace didn't exist for Shabbos. The person's not Muktzah. The mace is Muktzah. It dies on Shabbos. I mean,
is that really nolad?
You're
saying, why is that different than a branch falling off of a tree? Interesting. So maybe that's the answer. Maybe that's the answer to the Nitziv's Kasha. Interesting. Just 1 second. Yeah?
If he cuts the branches off the tree, it'd be different. But if it happens on its own, it's the same thing. It's the same.
So you're saying it shouldn't be worse?
No, it's exactly what he's saying.
Right. No, I hear what you're saying. It's interesting. Let's just back up. The Gemara says in the beginning of Maseches Beitza, Beitza shenolda biyamtiv. Everybody agrees it's muktzah, right? I'm sorry, machlokes b'sham b'fil, but the Gemara there talks about it, whether or not it's muktzah. So over there we say, that's nolad. That's something that was totally unexpected. It wasn't here before Shabbos started, before Yamtiv started. All of a sudden it pops out of nowhere and now you have an egg. Something like that we assume to be a higher category of muktzah. That's what the Pnei Yeshua argues is considered muktzah midarais. Okay. That's one suggestion. I like what you're saying. I have to think about it a little more, whether or not it's correct. But it might be the answer to the Nitziv's Kasha by David HaMelech. Okay, yeah?
Maybe the clothes are no lot.
Maybe what's a no lot?
The clothes on a king.
Uh-huh.
Since when a king dies, they're no longer the king's clothes. That's,
Could be. Okay, so that's one approach. The Chasam Sofer gives a different approach. And that approach of the Chasam Sofer goes as follows. The Chasam Sofer suggests there's a difference between Achilas Mukta and Tiltul Mukta. And the Chasam Sofer here suggests that that's going to be the difference between Mukta Midaraisa and Mukta Midarabana. Let's read the Chasam Sofer together. Va'an va'omer, says the Chasam Sofer, I respond and say the following. Kishnei mine muktza yesh. There are two different categories of muktza that we know of. Echad achila ve'echad tiltul. One is eating something which is muktza, like a beitza shenolda biyamtiv, and one is carrying a dvar muktza, handling a dvar muktza. U'muktza la'achila hu karov l'da'oraisa o'da'oraisa mam. She says, eating something which is muktza, that's really the main isser of muktza. Like, eating a beitza shenolda biyamtiv is a real problem. And we learn this from the Pasuk, we are told in Parshas Peshalach, make sure every food item that you want to eat on Shabbos is prepared before. And therefore, says the Chasam Sofer, to eat something which is muktzah, that's going to be a real prohibition midaraisa. Mashma, shein nachal b'shabbos yamtiv b'li shehuchan me'esmal v'chol shemukta midaita harei lohuchan v'shamar klal zed b'zem yushavim stira shulchan aruch magen avram be'ezem akomen kol zem mukta la'achila. That's all in the first category of mukta la'achila. Hasheni, but the second category of mukta is mukta la'taltel, and there ein bo isa da'araisa. By mukta, by handling mukta, for some reason the Chassam Sofer feels, that's on a much lower level than eating mukta itself. And therefore he says, Nehemiah came around and he was the one who was gozer on that new level of handling mukta. So again, we have two basic approaches. One is the Pnei Yeshua, in which he distinguishes between mukta mamish, which is nolad, and all the lower subcategories of mukta, which are the categories that we'll talk about in the coming weeks. And we have the Chassam Sofer here, which suggests a little bit otherwise, that there's a difference between achilas mukta and total mukta. Now, this is all based on the Rashi. Rashi takes us very literally, this Gemara Msachim. Rashi learns that mukta really might be an issa deraisa. All the other Rishonim disagree with Rashi, and they feel that the major opinion in the Rishonim, and that's what the Rambam writes as well, Asru Chachamim Letalzom Niktas Dvar. Most of the predominant Rishonim believe that mukta is certainly only an issa derabanan. They don't even get to this whole discussion whether or not, how are you going to figure out which one is deraisa, which one is not. The simple understanding in Rov Rishonim is that mukta is only midrabanan. Now, one very important halacha with regard to mukta is, what's the halacha when we come to suffik mukta? Now here we're talking about suffik mukta, which is suffik tilta mukta. We're not talking about the Pnei Yeshua's real mukta of nolad. We're talking about a mukta where everybody agrees that it's only midrabanan. Take, for example, carrying my cell phone on Shabbos, right? So everybody agrees it's only mukta midrabanan. That's for sure. It's not nolad. It's not from the higher category of achilas mukta. It's certainly only midrabanan. So what would you say if I have a suffik mukta? What would you say? You're not sure if something's mukta or not. What would you say the halacha is? Huh? Safik Yerabana Lakula. Like every other Safik Yerabana and Kolotar Kula that were lenient, we say you're allowed to go to Hakel and there's no reason to be Machmir. So you take, for example, the Gemara says, let's say I put out a trap before Shabbos. I put out a big net. And the Gemara says in Maseches Beitza, and now I want to trap all of the fish that are in the water. And now I come on Yom Tov and I'm not sure. Were the fish caught on Yom Tov itself or were the fish caught before Yom Tov? So am I allowed to use this or not? So you have a Safik Muchan. I'm not sure if this was prepared before Shabbos and Yantiv, or if it happened on Shabbos and Yantiv itself. So the Gemara says that you have to be Machmir, or for that matter, if you have a apple, and you see it on the side of the tree, and you're not sure, did it fall off on Shabbos itself, or did it fall off before Shabbos began? So the Gemara says in a case like that, one would have to be Machmir, and we say Safik Mukta, you have to be Machmir. Let's look in Shulchan Aruch, Simen Shin Chav Hei. Eina Yehudi Shetza Dagim. If you have a non-Jew that goes fishing on Shabbos or Yom Tov, Olikit Peiros La'atzmo, or he goes and he picks fruits. So if he does it for me, so if anyone does a malacha on my behalf, I can't have a na'at till after Shabbos. But if he doesn't do it for me, still, Asurim LeYisrael, a malacha was performed, even though it wasn't done for me, but a malacha was performed, I am not allowed to derive benefit from the malacha that was performed on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Now, Afilu Safik, what if I'm not sure? I have a fisherman, he goes fishing every day. So maybe the fish that he's coming to me with on Yom Tov, maybe he already caught them yesterday. So how do I know a malacha was done? It says the Shulchan Aruch, Afilu safek im likdan o tzidon hayom asurim babayom. You're not allowed to eat them on Shabbos or Yom Tov, even though I'm not sure that a malacha was done. Aval la'erev mutar miyad, afilu invade likdan v'tzidon hayom. Why is that the case? Shouldn't we say, ask the Magen Mishnah, why don't you say, safek d'rabbanan l'kula? What's the worst case scenario? What's the worst case scenario? So that's why this is important. So number one, if you learn like the Pnei Yeshua, so maybe the questions are off, because this is the super duper level of mukta. We're talking about eating mukta, right? Mukta le'achila.
By food items, not even just you can't eat it, but if it has to do with if it's in the var ochel, then you can't eat it.
Right, so if you learn like the, I'm sorry, if you learn like the Chasam Sofer, so then all of these questions are off. If you learn like the Pnei Yeshua, then it makes a difference whether you are nolad or not. So over here, it's not nolad. The fish was always here. It's not nolad. Maybe the apple is different, but the fish was always here. So how do you explain that? So this is a very important question that the Magen Mishnah asks. And the Magen Mishnah answers two answers. Says the Magen Mishnah, answer number one is, you're right. Generally, we assume Safik Yerabanan L'kula, but there's always an exception to the rule. And because mukta is something that's so hard to keep, so therefore we assume that they wanted Chachamim Asu Chizuk LeDivreihem. This is the exception to the rule. And they said you have to be Machmer by a Safik Muktzah because we want to make sure that everybody keeps to the rules the way they're supposed to. That's the answer that the Magid Mishnah gives. Why Muktzah is different. Okay? That's a very simple answer. Answer number two that he says is a very, very fundamentally important answer. Says the Magid Mishnah as follows. Yes, you're right that Muktzah is only a Din D'Rabbanan, and really we should have the right to be Mekel. However, he says we have a concept in the Gemara called a Davar She'yesh L'Matirin. What does it mean, a Davar She'yesh L'Matirin? A Davar She'yesh L'Matirin means when I have a Taruvus, I have milk and meat fall into a pot together. And now, generally we say, Chad B'Trei is Batel. So you're going to say, or Echad B'Shishim, so it's going to be Batel. We have all the rules of when something is considered Batel, when it's permissible to eat, even though we have a Taruvus B'Faneinu, and we know that there's something that's Aser right in front of us, but still, if it's Batel, so you're allowed to eat it. What if it's a Davar She'yesh L'Matirin? What if there's a very easy way for this to become mutter? You wait a little bit. So Rashi says, "Ad she'tochlenu be'iser, tochlenu be'heter." Why should you go and eat it right now when you know that the iser is right here? Wait a couple of minutes till you know it's going to become mutter, and then you're allowed to do it. For example, you have a beitzah shenolda beyamtiv, and you're not sure if it was nolda on yamtiv or not. So wait a few minutes till after yamtiv, right? That sounds like a good example. Why should you eat it now? Ad she'tochlenu be'iser. Why should you eat it now on yamtiv? You may as well wait till yamtiv is over, and then you'll be able to eat it without getting involved in the discussion at all. Now this is a very important concept, and this is what the Magen Mishnah tells us, that we have a principle over here, that even though Safik Darabana Lakula, even though we assume that you're right, you have a right to be Mekel whenever you have a question or a doubt in a Din Darabana, you can be Mekel and say, do it anyway. However, he says, when it's a Darvash Yesh L'Matirin, you don't have a right to get involved. Loosely translated to mean in our terms, forgetting about Muksa for now, it seems to indicate from here that you don't have a right to get involved in a Safik Darabanan Lekula Lechatchila. Right? Is that what it means? We all say, oh, Safik Darabanan Lekula, what's the big deal? It is a big deal. Because you have no right to rely on a Safik Darabanan Lekula unless it's B'dievet. Right? That's what you see from here. Now, a couple of examples are as follows. Let's say, take for example the Rambam. Look at number Zion. The Rambam in Perek Gimel Hechus Kriyash Ma'alacha Gimel. Says the Rambam. Let's say a person has a Beis HaKise. So a Beis HaKise, obviously you're not allowed to daven in there. We know that. What if you're a mazmin a Beis HaKise? You never actually used it yet, but you set it aside. You're doing construction in the house, you set it aside, they built it. It was never used, but everybody knows this is going to be the Beis HaKise. So it says the Rambam as follows. Beis HaKise HaChadash. What if you have a new house that's being built, and you designate one of the rooms as a Beis HaKise? Everything's set up, and you had the designers come, and it's clear that that's designated as the Beis HaKise. However, nobody ever used it yet. You're allowed to read Kriyas Shema there, because as of now, that room has no different status than any other room in the house. Aval, lo betocha, I'm sorry, you're allowed to say Kriyas Shema in front of it, aval lo betocha, not inside of it. Why? Because it's already been designated as a Beis HaKise, even though nobody used it. Merchatz HaChadash mutter l'kriyas betocha. Fine. Hayushnei batim, what if you have two rooms? Okay, what if you have two rooms? And I'm going through the plans with the architect, and I'm looking through the house, and I say, ah, so the architect shows me this is going to be the bathroom, and it already has a toilet and a sink in there, so that's clear. And then I point to the room on the other side of the hall, and I say, vizeh. But I don't finish off the sentence. So what exactly does vizeh mean? Does it mean the same way we designated this room as a Beis HaKise, so too I want to designate that room as a Beis HaKise as well, even though I didn't finish off the sentence? Or do you say, no, I was just a slip of the tongue and I didn't have at all any kavana to really set aside that room as a Beis HaKise? This is a shaila that the Rambam asked, and it's not really the Rambam shaila, it's really a Gemara Nedarim. The Gemara Nedarim, Dav Zayin Amud Aleph, says it's a Ibaya Dela of Shita. We're not sure what the halach is. Yesh Yada Beis HaKise or not? Should we assume that just by saying vizeh, if I'm standing in a bathroom and I say, oh, vizeh, does that mean to say that I'm designating that other room as a Beis HaKise as well? Or do you say, no, ein yad the Beis HaKise, there's no such thing. This is an ibaydala of shita, it's a suffix on a din d'rabbanan, and we're not sure what the halacha is. So why does the Rambam say over here that, lechatchila, you're not allowed to go into that second room, even though it may have been designated, you're not sure, why you're not allowed to go in there? It's a shayla midirabbanan. Why don't you say suffix d'rabbanan lahakil? It's a kasha that all the achronim ask. Says the Beis Yosef, you know why? Because even though it's a Safik Dirabanan, you don't have a right to get involved with Chatchila. Safik Dirabanan Lekula means once you're in the mess and you already did something wrong, so we say, okay, Safik Dirabanan Lekula, leave it as is. But to go now and say Kriyashma in that room, which might be designated already as a Beis HaKise, and we're not sure, you don't have a right to rely on Safik Dirabanan Lekula. Why? Because now you're in a state of Lechatchila. It's before the fact. You didn't yet say Kriyashma, and you come and ask the Shaila, should I go and say Kriyashma in that room? The answer is, of course not. You don't have a right to rely on Safik Dirabanan Lekula before the fact actually happens. The Magen Avraham writes as well, the Shulchan Aruch says in Siman Yud in Hilchos Tzitzis, what if you have a malbush, which is chetzio pasuach and chetzio sasim? What if you have something, a beged, and sometimes there's a problem nowadays when you have, like, you know, the Bnei Brak tzitzis that have a v-neck down to here, right? So it's a major shaila, because half of the beged, it's chetzio sasim and chetzio pasuach, it might not be chayv in tzitzis at all. So one has to be careful when if you wear one of those v-neck tzitzis, you have to be careful that the v-neck doesn't go too far down onto the beged. Let's say you have children's tzitzis. So sometimes the child's tzitzis is so small, so the v-neck really takes up half of the beged of tzitzis, and that's exactly what the Shulchan Aruch says is not right. So what if you have a beged? Chetzio pasuach, chetzio sasim. You're not sure if it's 50% closed, 50% open. Is that really a beged that's chayiv in tzitzis? So says the Shulchan Aruch, you have to put on tzitzis misafik, because maybe it is a beged that's chayiv in tzitzis, maybe it's not, so you have to wear the tzitzis misafik. However, he says on Shabbos, you cannot wear that beged outside without an Eruv. Why? Why not? Because the whole reason you're allowed to wear your tzitzis on Shabbos outside even without an Eruv is because we assume it's a beged. If this is not a beged shel tzitzis and you think you're doing a mitzvah, but you're really not, so then you're just carrying outside. Okay, it makes a lot of sense. What about if you're going to a karmelis midrabanan? Ask the Magen Avraham. What if you're going to a place that is only a reshus hayachim midrabanan? So worst case scenario, I wear the tzitzis, I'm not sure if I'm chayiv in tzitzis or not. What's the worst case scenario? I'm going to go into the place, I'm going to walk in this place, and I'm going to be carrying something which is only an iser midirabanan. So you say, safi dirabanan lakula, no? Yet the Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to. Explains the Magen Avraham. You know why you're not allowed to? Because you can't get involved in the safi dirabanan lakula lichatchila. Now, you want to know if you can walk out of your house, lichatchila, on Shabbos, with the tzitzis, you're not sure if it's chayiv or not, so safi dirabanan lakula, no! You don't have a right to rely on safi dirabanan lakula before the fact happens. And therefore we assume, says the Magen Avraham, one doesn't have the right to wear those tzitzis even if it's only a reshus hayachim derabanan. This is very relevant. You'll say, well, the tzitzis shayla never comes up, and you'll say that the beis hakiseh shayla never comes up either, but when it does come up, is the machlokes Rabbeinu Tam HaDeram that the Prima Gadim points out. That is by Sfiras HaOmer b'zman hazeh. Nowadays, we have Sfiras HaOmer is only a din midirabanan. We don't have to count Sfir midiraisa. It's only an institution midirabanan because we don't have a carbon omer anymore. Sfiras HaOmer is when you bring the carbon on Pesach, so then you count 49 days after you start the Akravas carbon omer. So now, nowadays, that Sfiras HaOmer is only midirabanan, and I daven Maariv right away. I think over here in the shul, I've never been here for a Sfira, I'm looking forward, but I think over here in the shul I was told they wait a little bit extra for Maariv during Sfira than they wait throughout the year. But that wasn't always the case, that wasn't always the practice. I assume 50, 60 years ago, most shuls daven Maariv the same time that they daven Maariv throughout the year. And this is a major shayla. You're davening Maariv in Bein HaShemashos, and you're going to count Sfira in Bein HaShemashos. Does a person have a right, even though Sfiras HaOmer is only midirabanan nowadays, do you have a right to say Safik Dirabanan Lakula and count Sfira during Bein HaShemashos, which is a Safik Yom Safik Laila? Well, you say, what's the big deal? It's only Dirabanan anyway. Safik Dirabanan Lakula. The answer, says the Prima Gadim, is who said you have a right to rely on Safik Dirabanan Lakula when we're talking about an Isser Midirabanan, a Mitzvah Midirabanan? So this is a very, very relevant topic that comes up over here. So back to where we started. Where did we start? Magen Mishnah wants to know, why should we assume that Safik Muktzah is going to be even worse than a regular Safik Dirabanan Lakula? So answer number one that he gave is, well, this is the exception to the rule. You're right, generally we assume Muktzah should have been a Safik Dirabanan Lakula, but Chachamim Asu Chizik the Debrayim, and therefore they said that a Safik is going to be Lachumra. Second answer that the Magen Mishnah gives is, you're right, Muktzah is going to be more Chamer. Why? Because it's like a Davar Sheyesh L'Matir. Why don't you just wait till Shabbos is over, and then it will be Mutter? And therefore we say that a Safik Muktzah is going to be Asur, because that's like making a Safik Dirabanan Lakula Lechatchila. Is that clear? Is all this clear?
No, now, the
last part, how it fits in again. So the Magen Mishnah's second answer is, when you have, let's say, a Taruvus in front of us, so you don't have a right to rely, or like all these cases we gave was just to give a little bit more of depth of explanation into the Magen Mishnah's answer. You never have a right to say, Safik Dirabanan Lakula anyway, so I may as well be Mekel. That's not true. That's only B'dievet. Lechatchila, you don't have a right to rely on that. So over here he says, right now, I'm not sure if this item is Muktzah or not. Why get involved in the Shaila? You may as well wait till after Shabbos. It's only another few hours anyway. Wait till after Shabbos and we'll be mutter. That's like relying on a Safik Dirabanan Lakula, lechatchila, to use it now. So that's why the Magen Mishnah says, maybe that's the reason why Safik Muktzah, even though we should have said Safik Dirabanan Lakula because Muktzah is only midirabanan, but still, says the Magen Mishnah, we're going to be machmir because Safik Dirabanan Lakula, lechatchila, we're not going to rely on. Okay? Now, two major nafkaminas with this will be the following. Number one nafkamina is, wow, it's 5 to 9, 5 to 10 already. Now, if kabina number one is, let's say if I wait till after Shabbos, the item is going to get spoiled. For example, I have the fish. A guy comes to my house and he gives me fish, and I'm not sure were these trapped on Shabbos or not. Were these trapped on Yom Tov or not? So you're not sure. It's a Safik Muktzah. So am I allowed to use it? So we say, yeah, if you say Safik Muktzah is also because Muktzah, we have to be machmir on it because we want to make sure everyone's keeping to the rules, and it doesn't matter if it's going to get spoiled. We want to make sure everyone's keeping to the rules, so then you have to make sure not to use it. Safik Muktzah is Aser. But if you're going to say the only reason why Safik Muktzah is mutter is Aser is because what? You may as well just wait till tonight. What if the fish is going to get spoiled by tonight? That's not a Dabar Sheyesh L'Matirin. That's like B'di'eved. That's Safik Rabban L'Kula. You have a right to be Mekel B'di'eved because later on it's not going to be permissible. So that's Nafkamina number one, which is a very important Nafkamina. Nafkamina number two, which is a very lumdish Nafkamina, goes as follows. It's not so true that this would really be defined as a Dabar Sheyesh L'Matirin. It's not so true. And the reason why is as follows. The Tzlach has a very famous Chiddush, and this is a Chiddush that everyone should learn tonight and remember forever. The Tzlach has it in Meseches Pesachim Daf Tes, in Meseches Beitza Daf Chav Dalet. He has it in Tshuvas Nodeb Yehuda. Tzlach and the Nodeb Yehuda is the same person. Tzlach Nodeb Yehuda and the Dagel Mervava is all the same person. So the Tzlach has it both in Pesachim, in Beitza, and in the Tshuvas Nodeb Yehuda as well, where he says the following idea. When do we say the din of Dabar Sheyesh L'Matirin? When do we say that, well, you may as well wait anyway because there's no reason to get involved? That's only when we're talking about something which is b'midi de'achila. Okay, that's only when you have something which is what we call a hana shel kilui. I'm going to eat it once and then it's gone. So why eat it now? You may as well wait till tonight and then you can eat it. You're not sure if this item, if let's say this fish was caught on Shabbos or not. Okay, so you may as well, you're only going to eat the fish once. So you may as well eat it tonight for dinner. When Shabbos is over and you don't get involved in the Shaila, instead of eating it now, getting involved in the issue of Muktzah. Okay? However, what if I have a midi de tiltul? What if I have a question if something is Muktzah, because I'm not sure if the item is Muktzah, and if I'm not sure if I'm allowed to handle it on Shabbos. Not eat it. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to handle it on Shabbos. So there says the Tzlach, you can't say, well, you may as well pick it up tonight. Picking it up tonight doesn't help for my purposes now. I want to pick it up now, I want to pick it up later, I want to pick it up tonight as well. I can pick it up three different times. In a case like that, he says, that's not called the Dabar Sheyesh L'Matirin. That's not called Ad She'Tochlena Be'Isra Tochlena Be'Heter. You don't say, well, you may as well just wait till tonight and then it's going to be Mutter. What do you mean? I want to use it right now. So by Achila, is that clear? By Achila we say, since you're only going to eat it once, so you may as well wait till tonight to have that one opportunity to eat it instead of getting involved in the question now and having that Safik Muktzah. However, by Tiltul Muktzah, since in a case like that, you can be metaltal now, you can be metaltal later, you can be metaltal the next day or the next week, 100 times in between, so that's not called a Dabar Sheyesh L'Matirin. Let's maybe flesh it out a little bit to explain it a little bit more clearly. Let's just explain it a little more clearly. It will become clear when you hear it like this. Let's say, for example, this chiddush of the tzlach doesn't only apply here, it applies in other areas of halacha as well. Let's say we know one has to wait 6 hours between eating milk and meat. So there are different practices. Some people wait three, some people wait six. Let's say I'm a kind of family that waits six, or you're the kind of family that waits three, whatever your practice is. And now I'm not sure if it's really 6 hours. It happens a lot on Shabbos, the long Shabbos, right? You're not sure. When did I finish eating the meat? Did I finish at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock? Did I bench at 1 o'clock? Did I not? Were we schmoozing after the meal? You don't really know. So now it comes 7 o'clock at night or 6 o'clock at night, and you're not sure, can I eat ice cream Shabbos afternoon or not? Happen in anybody's house? Happens in my house all the time. So we're not sure. Are you allowed to eat milchiks or not? So you have a suffix whether you're milchiks. You have a suffix whether or not 6 hours have passed. So this waiting 6 hours, is that a din d'oraisa or din d'rabbanan? Din d'rabbanan, it's a minig. Really, midaraisa, you're not allowed to eat basar v'chal that was cooked together. Now we extended it, we said, not only if it was cooked together, but even you're not allowed to eat it in the same time. Not only you're not allowed to eat it at the same time, you have to wait 6 hours after you eat it. Okay, so the whole thing is chumra al gabi chumra al gabi chumra. So now I'm 6 hours later, and I'm not sure, is it 5 hours, is it 6 hours, did all the time really pass? So what would you have said? I should have said safik yarabana l'kula. No? No? That's what I would have said. The whole din is a din d'rabbanan. It's an extension of an extension of an extension of an original din d'oraisa of cooking basar v'chalav together. Okay, if I have a suffix 6 hours, so you just forget about it. Suffix d'rabbanan l'kula, doesn't matter. Say some of the achronim, no, it's a dabar sheyesh l'matirin. You can wait another half an hour. You can wait another half an hour, another hour, and then you eat the ice cream. So what are you in such a rush? You may as well wait. Why get involved in the shaila? Says the Nadi Yehuda, no. Who said? I want to eat the ice cream right now. I want to eat the ice cream now. That's not called a devashesh matirin, because I want to eat ice cream now, I want to eat ice cream later. Correct? I don't want to just have one scoop of ice cream. I want to have a little bit of scoop of ice cream now. I want to have a scoop of ice cream in an hour from now. So you can't tell me, oh, you may as well wait for another 6 hours, for another hour or two till you know that the 6 hours have passed. No. If right now I want to know if I'm milchigs or fleishigs, and I want to have ice cream now, and I want to have ice cream in 20 minutes and in 30 minutes, you cannot call it a double shayesh matirin. And in fact, maybe we would be makel in a case like that if a person is genuinely misupik, if a person is really not sure whether 6 hours have passed, perhaps we'd be makel and we would say, you're allowed to eat the ice cream now. Again, we're not talking about someone who says, oh, I'm not sure, maybe 6 hours have passed. Well, don't be so negligent. But we're talking about someone who has a genuine suffix. They're not really sure when they finished eating or when they become milchers. They totally forgot, weren't paying attention. So in a case like that, perhaps we would say that you don't have to wait 6 hours. There's another reason why some of the achronim are makel, and that is, it's a svek sveka. Number one, maybe you don't have to wait 6 hours in the first place. Maybe 1 hour is good enough, or 3 hours is good enough. Or number two, maybe 6 hours have already passed. So that might be another svar l'hakel. That's what Rav Avadi Yosef writes. But the Nedib Yehuda has it in another case as well. He says there was a couple who was engaged, and there is a halacha called Mu'uberes Chaveru Menekes Chaveru. That halacha is a very important halacha that's relevant even today. And that is when you have a woman who is pregnant or nursing, so she is not allowed to get married until the child is a certain age. The reason why the Gemara has this institution is because we're concerned that maybe she's going to get remarried and the second husband is not going to care about the kids from the first husband. They're not his kids. I don't know what kind of man we're dealing with. But if you have somebody of that nature, so the Gemara was concerned that maybe the child is going to die because the new husband is not going to feel compelled to provide for this child who's not his own. And therefore the Gemara says we have an institution that a woman, within the first 24 months of the child being born, is not allowed to get remarried until the child turns 2 years old. And then we assume that the child is going to eat salads, and then we assume that the child is going to be taken care of. So then we no longer have this opposition. We no longer have this issue that we worry about. That's what the Gemara tells us. So what if you have a woman? The Nadi Yehuda discusses the following shayla in a tshuva. And that's what I put in Amar Ches. What if you have a woman who is engaged to a man, and now we see that she's pregnant? Now we're not sure. How did she become pregnant? She was never married. So what's going on? So that's a very important question. So you gave an answer a few days ago. Maybe she went to a swimming pool and became pregnant. That's highly unlikely. So how did the woman become pregnant? We were talking about something else. So how did the woman become pregnant?
Sounds more interesting.
Yeah, for another shiur. So how did the woman become pregnant if she's not married to a husband and she was never married? So there's two possibilities. Either she was mezana with another man or she was mezana with her soon-to-be husband. Those are the two options. So the husband says, well, it seems that she was mezana with someone else. And she says, what are you talking about? It was from you. It wasn't from anybody else. You did something wrong. We were living together, and I was impregnated by you. So that's the question. We have a suffix on a din d'rabbanan. We're not sure if she's pregnant from another man, then she's not allowed to go and get married now. Why? Because that's a din mu'uberes chaveru. She's pregnant from another man. We have to wait till the child's 2 years old. Only then can she go and get remarried. But if she's pregnant from her soon-to-be husband, that's not mu'uberes chaveru. She's pregnant from him, so she may as well go and get married to him. Right now, there's no reason to wait 2 years until the child is born and then subsequently turns 2 years old. Okay, so this is a very important question that was brought up to the Nadi Yehuda as an actual shayla. They had this case where the man wants to know, can he go ahead and get married to his woman who is now pregnant before she got married? And the Nadi Yehuda says, well, maybe we should say it's a davar sheyesh lamatirin. Maybe we should say, wait 2 years, what's the big deal? You wait 2 years to get married, what's the big deal? Wait till the shayla is out of question. And once you pass 2 year mark, then you know, there's no question about being muberes chaveru menekes chaveru. Well, that's a very nice thing to say. However, says Nadi Yehuda, what about the fact that the guy wants to be with his wife every night until 2 years are up? So you can't say that's a davar sheyesh lamatirin and wait 2 years from now and then it will be mutter. That's not reasonable. The only time, says the Nadi Yehuda, that we say davar sheyesh lamatirin is when it's a one-time thing. It's a food item. It's a fish. And we're not sure if the fish was caught on Shabbos or not. So then you say, safik muchan. So you may as well wait till after Shabbos and then it's going to be permissible. Why get involved in the shayla? But when I have something like this where I want to marry the woman and I want to live with her for the next 2 years every night, and I want to be with her all the time, you can't tell me, well, it's a davar sheyesh lamatirin, you may as well wait 2 years. Of course I don't want to wait 2 years. That's not reasonable to tell someone that safek rabbanan l'chumra, you have to wait 2 years. That's ridiculous. Or so too, he says, maybe this is the reason why, if a person wants to have ice cream and he wants to be milchigs now, don't tell me I have to wait another hour. I want to eat milchigs throughout this hour as well. So in a case like that, perhaps, We would not say Safi Darabana Lakula. I'm sorry, we would apply the principle of Safi Darabana Lakula, and we wouldn't call that a Davar Sheyesh L'Matirin. Why? Again, the Nevi Yehuda, this ties back into what we were saying. Because the Magen Mishnah wants to know, just to review, the Magen Mishnah wants to know, why are we machmir by Safik Muksa, even though by every other Safik Darabana we say that it's Lakula? Answer number one is what? Because Chacham Mechmiru, for some reason this is the exception to the rule, and they said, even though generally we say Safik Darabana Lakula over here, by the Safik Muksa we're going to be machmir. Answer number two is, because it's like a Davar Sheyesh L'Matirin, wait till Shabbos is over. Well, not so fast. Davar Sheyesh L'Matirin doesn't apply to everything. It applies only to something which is going to be eaten one time. But what about something else? What about carrying muksa? What about picking something up? And I'm not sure if my cell phone is muksa or not. I'm not sure if the watch is muksa or not. I'm not sure if something else is muksa or not. Well, I want to carry it now. I want to carry it later. You can't say, oh, well, wait till after Shabbos, then you get yourself out of the problem. There's no Shabbos. That's not an option. That's not true. So therefore, maybe that would be very relevant. This Chiddush of the Noda Biyuda would be very relevant to the two answers that the Magen Mishnah suggests, whether or not we should say that Safik Muktzah is always going to be Usur, or maybe there are times when we should say that Safik Muktzah would actually be permissible. Amir Tashem, we will continue with the Halachas of Muktzah next week. It's a food item, but you have a whole tub of ice cream. Again, so contrast that to the one egg, to the one egg, that can, I'm sorry, to the one egg or the one fish that can only be